Good day, everybody. This is Hope, and you're listening to Hope Solo Speaks. Sports, movies, and politics are important to most of us. We all need to get away from the realities of our own worlds, and at times we just need to turn off. For me, that can mean a few things, but what is always constant is the power and the love of a good movie. So I thought we would check in with a woman that I admire. She is an award-winning writer and director, and she wants to tackle my personal story in the future and put it on screen. She is a rare commodity, being a female filmmaker in Hollywood, and she approaches her craft of making movies, shorts, and streaming series with a commitment to female roles being real, oftentimes being the true warriors on screen. Her film Pimp, starring Kiki Palmer and executive produced by Lee Daniels, went on to win Best Picture and Audience Awards at HBO's Urban World Festival. She is from Brooklyn, spends much time in LA and in Europe, and she remembers the glory days of Hollywood. She pontificates about the direction movies are heading, the state of the industry, and the hope for the future. She continues to push boundaries and stands on principle, a classy woman with an abundance of talent. I am proud and honored to bring on Christine Krokos, somebody who has become my dear friend. Christine Krokos, welcome to Hope Solo Speaks. Thank you so much for being on.
Oh my God, Hope, are you kidding me? It's an honor to sit and hang and talk.
Yeah, man, I'm very excited for this conversation. We talked to many guests on this show who are successful guests in their own field or in their own right. We've had amazing guests. We've had World Cup champions, Olympians. We've had Paralympians. We've had survivalists. We've had writers. We've had doctors. We've had politicians. And what I've realized is that a lot of my guests have they have a lot in common. And I believe it's their passion and their zest for not just life, but for their body of work. And that's why you fit on this show perfectly, because of your passion, you know, obviously for life, but obviously what you do. So finally, I'm very proud to say that we have a award-winning writer and director, someone that I love, someone that I admire, and somebody that I would choose to personally direct my life story.
I know, what an honor. And Jesus, that's such a big shoe to fill. It's amazing.
And just, you know, to be forthright for all of you listening out there, I did choose out of a lot of directors and writers that you can choose from. I sat down with Christine Kroko. She came highly recommended, but I had a lack of faith and trust in doing my story, my life story in Hollywood as a biopic. But when I sat down with Christine, both Jeremy and I sat down with you in a hotel in North Carolina, and I was very excited to put my faith and my trust into you. One of, you know, it's a hard industry being a female director and writer, and here you are just breaking paths forward for women, you know, in the future to be in this role.
Yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, Hope, having someone's life rights and biopic and all that in their hands as a filmmaker is so hard. I think biopics are the hardest genres for most filmmakers because you only have a small limited amount of time to make a movie, write a screenplay under 2 hours within the 2 hour range. And you have so much of someone's life that you have to pack in there. And that's part of the stuff that, you know, our steps is like, A, getting to know the person that, you know, I'm doing the biopic on, which is you, but also getting into the world and seeing the tone and where it lives in today's world. That's kind of the approach into biopics, is like, you have to see where it lives in the world today and how it's relatable. Because there's every biopic you see, if you look at like Queen's biopic or you look at the Elton John biopic and all these great biopics, it's interesting the angle into the story and then focusing on, you know, supporting the message to certain people. So this is the part that I've been doing so much work on as we get to know each other more and more and look at what the story is. There's the sports element, which everyone knows and everyone has seen. But I think the coolest part about your story, where I really wanted it, Hope, like I wanted more than anything to have an opportunity in telling your story, is finding the intimate portrait of being with someone that the world really didn't know at that time, you know, behind the scenes. And that makes a great complex character, because there's so many highs and lows of what one goes to thrive at being great at what they do. To me, this is the most exciting part and also the most challenging, right? So the development part of every movie, the script is the hardest part to land, because then after that, it's fun. But everyone used to say back in old cinema, when cinema first started, that the three most important things to a great film was a script. And you're like, yeah, that's true. And then you have to go and find the person who will embody you and become the Hope Solo on screen that, you know, has those layers of humanity that people go like, they understand it. It's this transformation and the variety of what they come to the screen with. So that's also the other compartments that are so fascinating and cool and exciting for me, you know, which will be exciting for you too.
Well, I do remember reading that script for the first time. And like you said, there were going to be a number of different editions of the script. But when I first had to read the script, I was so nervous because this is my life and it's your depiction. It's you talking to my friends, my family, and figuring out what's important. So it is a really difficult process. But like I said, I'm very honored to be with somebody that I love and that I trust. But this isn't about, you know, me. I think this is really incredible, taking on a biopic. And I do want to ask you more about that, like your interest in sports and soccer. And if you've always been into soccer, or if you had to study it, your experience at the 2019 World Cup in France.
Yeah.
But why sports?
Well, I grew up in New York and Brooklyn. So my sport, I was a basketball player. You know, I played basketball. I thought one day I'd be seeing a WNBA, but it wasn't available at the time going to college. You know, like you're like, you can get a college, you know, scholarship and playing sports, but I couldn't see where we were going with it. So I obviously had a love for film as well. At the same time, I was obsessed with both. So generally I was a huge sports fan, and in New York, it's like baseball, there's soccer, there's football, there's, you know, this Americana, you know, like the gathering of every sport in the world. And soccer, it's interesting because when I met you, Hope, I've seen so much soccer in my life, but I didn't really understand the logistics of the game. But then meeting you and understanding like what a goalkeeper did, I became obsessed. I go, this is brilliant. This is like a whole other level of psychology. And the team, I also like the team part of it too. And also, you know, what a goalkeeper, you know, like how they save a game. It's just, it's so genius. And for me, I find that to be one of the most powerful positions. So I became even more enthralled in the sport and got into obviously the women's sport and, you know, the way it works in America and just all the backstory on it. It's very fascinating stuff. And a lot of people don't know about it. You know, they watch the game, they're like, the girls are great, but they don't understand what's happening and how they got there. It's wild. Of course. Yeah, it's powerful stuff.
Well, you were born and raised, like you said, in Brooklyn. Greek immigrant parents.
Yep.
Living the American dream. I mean, you went to film school at USC.
Mm-hmm.
And you always had a desire to be a basketball player or to be in the film industry, right?
Yeah. So my parents came from Greece. You know, they came like every immigrant with nothing and came to America to be part of that, you know, that start of the American opportunity for a better life outside of what they were, you know, born into. And I played a lot of sports. I loved sports. I was always like on my bike or running or doing stuff like that. But I loved competition. But the film making part of it is the magic. You know, once you go to the movies, which is something that's we're missing today, which we'll get into later, but the movie magic experience, I remember watching like The Wizard of Oz for the first time and going like, what the hell did I just see on the screen? How did they make that? That's where my love for film sort of started to grow. And there was a time I was getting into photography, and then I was doing short films in art classes in high school. And cinema is so powerful. To the fact that you could sit and shoot things and have people perform things and write a story and edit it and create it and entertain someone with it. I thought, what an incredible experience that would be. So I went to USC Film School, which is a really tough school to get into. But, you know, coming from Brooklyn with immigrant parents, I wanted to go do something different and get away from New York and be in LA and be in that Hollywood sort of universe and learn more about it. So that's kind of where it all just began.
That is too funny that you were inspired by the Wizard of Oz, because I was scared to death of the Wizard of Oz as a kid.
But that's what's so great about it is, like, look at the emotional reaction we had. Uh-huh. If you watch that movie again, you know, Hope, it's funny. I watch that movie almost every year. It reinvents itself in the times. Like during the pandemic, watching that, you're like, okay, it went a whole other level. And that's really brilliant filmmaking. It's so great. And I'm a big Judy Garland fan. Like, I love all the old great actors, and those were like,
okay, I'm going to watch it.
Yeah. You got to see it.
I'm not going to let my kids watch it yet.
No. They're too young.
So you did a lot of shorts at USC. Is that right?
Yeah.
And a lot of your shorts, they went to some of the top film festivals around the world or in the country. So when did you really break into making your first movie?
Yeah. So, you know, filmmakers, and especially women, right, Hope, we always go, like, the female blueprint is its own thing. And it's a tough one. Sometimes I tell women filmmakers come to me and say, how do you go from A to B? And it's like, there's no real blueprint still that works on the female side, because it's just, it's, you know, to be a filmmaker, you have to convince people to give you financing to make your film and what have you. So it's like the journey's really complicated. So a lot of filmmakers start with, like, short films. Like, it's a short form of telling movies in, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. They go to film festivals. That's a good, like, launching pad to premiere stuff and start telling people, you know, like, having people see your work as a storyteller. But most importantly, it's really the voice in which you bring. So when I was doing shorts, I was always doing a female driven stuff, you know, like whether it was like a story from the streets of New York, or I did, you know, my first short that was winning awards and going to film festivals was on a female pimp. And I took that story because I wanted to tell the feature version of it, which I did years later. But it's the way to get people to respond and say, yeah, there is a market, an audience. People love this character. And then you spin it into the bigger feature version of it, which then entails writing a script. And again, the script is the hardest part, you know, like really sort of landing the characters and the dialogue and what's happening to them and their journey. And then, you know, raising the money and making the movie. So that's the film that obviously when we met was coming out at the time, which I did a female pimp with Kiki Palmer, who played, you know, Wednesday.
She's just amazing. Yeah.
Kiki Palmer. Amazing. And she's doing amazing since the film, which is, you know, I'm super proud of, you know, where she ended up right now with her career. It's amazing.
And but she was executively produced by the one and only Lee Daniels.
Yes. Yep. Lee Daniels produced the film, and he came in at the time. We had very little money. So Hope, I had this movie and I had Kiki attached, and she was with me from the beginning of the journey. And she was very young when I met her, and she was just like, I want to play this role. And she really, you know, brought her A game and kind of blew me away with the audition we did together. And then we finally went around town. Nobody wanted to finance the movie because they couldn't see Kiki playing a pimp. They just couldn't see, you know, they saw me. They're like, what does she know about the pimp game? And I'm like, oh my God, you know? So it took us years to raise the money. Very little money. And then we started to put it together. But what I loved is Kiki was with me from start to finish. And we were just ride or die and like getting this movie made, because we both believed in it. I believed in her. She believed in me. And we got our financing. And then Lee heard that we were shooting this pimp movie in the Bronx. And, you know, one of his producers tracked us down when we had wrapped the movie, and he wanted to see what I had shot, and he was blown away and was like, what can I do to help you guys? We're like, we have no money for post, you know, and he came in and just, you know, helped us finish the film and get it out to the world. So it was, it's an extraordinary experience, but a really, really tough one.
Well, tell the audience, if you haven't heard of the movie Pimp, where can you find it?
Pimp right now is on, yeah, it's on iTunes, Amazon, okay. Showtime. We sold it to Showtime. It's on Showtime all the time. You can find it there. It's anywhere you know, any of the streamers have it, except
Netflix. Tell us about, how did you figure out how to write the dialogue for a female pimp? How did you learn about, you know, that kind of world?
I think, you know, I would say for most filmmakers, Hope, like when you're a writer and a director, you kind of do so much research, like so much. And I also explored what was happening in that world in Atlanta. Like I went and I met female pimps kind of went in their cars and checked out the streets with them at night and kind of understood the way they spoke to their girls or how the game is today, because it's a different lens. It's the oldest game in the world, but it's a flip lens from a female perspective, which is why I wanted to say, tell that.
But there are female pimps. It's
yes.
Foolish to think there wouldn't be.
Yes. Yes. There's more female pimps than most people would ever think, which is kind of wild. And I thought, oh, wow, how does that old school game that we grew up learning about the pimp world and in rap music, you know, it's a cult, there's its own culture. So I thought, how does that play in with a woman now sort of driving that ship? And I thought it was super cool. But I also made it a love story, and I made it, you know, about these two women that fall in love. So it has that, because in the end, that's the heart of the film, is the relationship between the two girls. And I think it worked well with the backdrop of being in a hyper masculine world of the pimp game and these two women surviving the street. So all of that was what I channeled. And I think I found a way to speak that language and sort of make something come out of it that worked.
Let me ask you this, Christine. Obviously, I'm very aware of you losing your mother, but she had a very long battle with cancer. How has that influenced your writing, your directing, or the roles that you want to be writing about?
Yeah. Well, I think when you have like a mom who, you know, my mom battled cancer for 27 years. And so when you have a mom that, and you have four kids, she had four kids, she's raising four kids, she's battling cancer, you know, that for me is like a warrior woman. You know, there's that lens of like the warrior. And again, that there's a struggle in that, right? So what influences me from that experience is that I only look for stories, Hope, and you know, this is why I came after you and your story. It's that warrior story, that warrior woman lens that we don't see so much in Hollywood. You see more like faux feminism. It's like, oh, we're going to go see this like Marvel female driven thing. Yes. And it's fake feminism. You're like, that's not reality. It's not relatable. There's nothing in realism.
Can we talk about Wonder Woman? I mean, it was like I was supposed to love it. And I was so bothered by it. I mean, the fighting wasn't great. Some of the female warriors, the Amazon women, were really good fighters, but it should have been the main character as well.
Yeah.
But yes, I feel you. It's like that faux feminine.
Faux feminist. Yeah, but see, Hope, if you take Wonder Woman, the Amazon women that you're talking about with Robin Wright, who was the aunt who trained her, great character, right?
Amazing.
And then all of a sudden, they're being attacked in their battle. When she died, the movie kind of ended for me, because then Wonder Woman went on and got lost in the male gaze. And, you know, it was all about her, like, checking out Chris Pine on a boat. You're like, wait, but your aunt who taught you everything just died.
And slow motion fighting.
Yeah, slow motion fighting. And then you're on this boat, like, 5 minutes after her death. And there's no, we didn't feel the rest of that and what it did to her to make her so great. It just went on to, like, oh, here comes the guy again. And I go, oh, come on. So somewhere there, it's exactly what you said. It just falls short, and it's a bummer. It's the fake warrior woman lens.
Well, tell us more about that, because women are getting casted as a lead character in more movies and Marvel movies, like we just spoke about. But so where are we going wrong in Hollywood?
Well, there's a lot of, the whole corporate side of Hollywood is right now, like the monopolies, like one streamer's buying studios, like Amazon's buying MGM, you know, it's like, it's just becoming this corporation with algorithms. So what happens is if one female movie doesn't hit, then it screws up everything else for more women coming up the pipeline. And that's the problem. It's now we're leaning into technology, telling us what people want to see. And I find that silly, because, you know, Hope, it's like when Steve Jobs invented the Apple phone, he told everyone would be on her phone. Everybody laughed at him and said, no way. And he goes, people don't know what they want until they see it. And I believe in that. And I think that a lot of women are pushing forward. Film festivals is one thing that I think is a great outlet that a lot of women, they look for more female voices. But again, it's like, it's like a lottery. It's like, it's just like, you know, they'll pick and choose what they want. They'll want a rom-com, but the male role is more the lead than the female. It's still a very, it hasn't landed consistently yet. And then you have your movie stars, which is also a big aspect to Hope. So like, you know, it's like you take Reese Witherspoon or you take Nicole Kidman's or the Charlize Theron's, they have their own companies. They produce stuff for themselves and they're doing great. That's a good blueprint to keep, you know, creating content with women, strong women. But in other areas, it's still so far away from, you know, being above everything else on the marketplace. It's just really tough.
Well, there are women like you in Hollywood, filmmakers and directors who are pushing back, like you said. So where do you think we're going in the future? Are we headed in the right direction? Seems like there are more.
Oh, no, I think it's
female voices.
No. Yeah, there's tons of female voices. And I'll tell you, Hope, a lot of outside America, we have to now look at it like cinema as a whole in the storytelling. Europe has amazing female voices and great female directors that are like in the game coming in really nice. The Middle East, believe it or not, like if you look at Lebanon has some off the charts female directors that are winning Cannes and great festivals like that, that are making like masterpieces. But again, these are movies that are hard to penetrate the American audience. But if you're a big film lover, you'll find them somewhere if you're into foreign movies and stuff like that. But again, they're not these big commercial things because everything in America now, if you've seen, it's like Marvel this and Top Gun and all these like, you know, big like action franchise stuff, John Wick. That's what's making money in the theaters. You know, these female driven movies that are winning Cannes are not, they're playing on Amazon, but you got to go buy it and search for it. There's no marketing for that here. And it's just, it's still tricky. And I have to say right now, since COVID, it's even harder. Because streamers are hit or miss. There's so much content. Like when you go on Netflix, there's just so much. You don't even know where to begin. You know, it's like whatever's on the front page is what you're looking at, or you never get past that.
Oh, so no, we will flip for two hours and then realize it's time to go to bed.
Yeah, but that's what it is. Or you're putting on something for 10 minutes and on to the next. And it's a really, really tricky time. And I hope cinemas come back more because I think that's killing a lot of like high quality, you know, filmmaking where people go to the theaters and watch these movies and then it's word of mouth. We just don't have that anymore. I think a lot of Hollywood is very stuck right now. I think we're in this like recalibrating mode of figuring out where people are, because also, Hope, if you think about it, during the pandemic, we were binging. I mean, we all did it. We were all home. Like, we don't know what's happening with our world and we're binging, but it's hard now to get people to get out of that binging mentality and into like just like real artwork. It's just they want to sort of check out. You know what I mean? So the quality of the movies it's just different. The genres, everything is just different.
It seems like it's a very just strange time then, I guess, to see what the ingredient to success will be in the future for future films, for filmmakers, for directors, for writers. That seems to be a confusing time. Now, do you think this has to do because of the pandemic?
The pandemic is one because there was the financial part. Everything is money, right? So the financing part got rejiggered in a big way. So a lot of people right now are scared to finance just anything. So I'll give you an example, Hope. It's like every project, anything I have, everyone's like, we love this, but who's going to play so-and-so, right? Like, who's going to play you in your biopic? They want to know that person, because then they run it into an algorithm to see what their international value is and stuff. So then they know what kind of budget to try to make the movie in to play it safe. Because the money part, there's a lot of money that got lost, and a lot of movies that were made for $100 million before the pandemic, that when the pandemic hit, they had nowhere to release the movie and make money, let's say in the theaters or international, it went to streamers. So even Gal Gadot in Wonder Woman 2, remember, it went to HBO. They didn't really, and they spent like $100 million on that movie, you know? So you start to, it's scaled down. And this is where it's a little bit tricky right now, because they don't know where to put the money at the moment, because there's no formula where it's working for a blockbuster or another hit here. It's a very tricky time. So they're playing it safe. Unless you're Tom Cruise. But Tom Cruise made Top Gun before the pandemic, Hope, and he refused to release it during the pandemic to a streamer, because he was like, this movie's meant to be seen on the big screen. So he held it for years, for 2-3 years, and then premiered in Cannes, and it was a smash hit. And then he went to Cannes, and then everybody wrote like, oh my God, movies are back. And Tom Cruise is saving.
He saved Hollywood. That was because are people still going to the movies? It doesn't, unless it's a blockbuster perhaps, but
yeah.
Where do you see the numbers going now with the movie industry?
I think this summer is going to be interesting because it's going to be the first free COVID summer. Like where last summer, people were still traveling with like COVID testing and like just, you know, that heightened fear of the COVID spread. Now, this is the summer that I think whatever is going to come down the pipeline will be interesting to see if it helps boost the movie theaters. I think this summer will be telling as to where we're really going. And if the studios, because also Hope, if you look at a studio like Warner Brothers, when I worked at Warner Brothers years ago, they were making like 30, 35 movies a year. We're talking like billions. Now they're making like 4-5 movies.
Wow.
That's a massive difference. And that's because it's, again, you know, it's the budgets, you know, these movies back in the day, you had also the movie stars were so far, you know, on the list. You had tons of movie stars that meant something in the box office. Now we don't have that. We're, the movie star is kind of dying at the moment, which is also another reason why things are a bit choppy, because they're like, if we put Brad Pitt in a movie, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get XYZ at the box office. Like he did a film just last year called Babylon with Margot Robbie, and the movie didn't make money. They spent $100 million and it made no money. So this is the part where you're like, okay, Tom Cruise nailed it, but you know, some other movie stars don't. There was also another rom-com with Julia Roberts and George Clooney, like Lost in Paradise or something in Paradise, and it made no money. It was a disaster. Like nobody saw it.
All right. Well, here's a question for you, Christine. Who would play me?
Who would play you? Oh my God, Hope. It's funny. The trickiest part is the age range of who can.
Do you remember who I really wanted?
I know.
I was stuck on her. I don't know if we can talk about this stuff, but can we?
I know. I'm nervous too.
I think we should leave in the comments. She's not. Oh, we should. Everybody.
We should ask people who should play Hope Solo in the comments, because it's funny. But,
my number one choice, she wouldn't play me anymore, right? Because of the age thing, right?
No, it's funny, Hope. I saw her in LA.
Oh, so it's possible.
And sorry,
I'm keeping this a secret to everybody.
Yeah, because I went to see, you know, because again, it's all packaging. Like who
can she's athletic.
That's she's very athletic.
Really important. She's a great actress.
Yeah. But in real life, she's very small. She's like her petite.
Oh, she's skinny.
Tall. Yeah. She's skinny, but you know,
put on some weight, some muscles.
You know, Hope, the cool thing with playing you is an actress to commit to the transformation. You know, it's we need someone who's going to say, yeah, I'll hit the gym. It's like when Hilary Swank did, you know, Million Dollar Baby, she was in the gym for months.
Don't actors and actresses love to transform the character and the roles that they play?
Believe it or not, some do and some avoid that. Like I know some actresses I heard, they don't like to go to the gym. And you're like, okay, then she's not going to play Hope, you know? They have to love the gym. It's one thing. It's like when you look at Charlize Theron in Atomic Blonde, she was training for those fight sequences for months because she's a badass and wants to do that. But I'm not sure I can get just anybody that we love to go into the gym like that. They'll be like, I don't know. It's a commitment.
But she's out there. Walking down the red carpet with biceps and shoulders.
No. And there's a few actresses who are great, but then, you know, you meet them and then they're so tiny and you can't really cheat that, you know, there's only so much you can do because you have a presence. And I think a goalkeeper is such an intimidating position. So, and you had that, you know, the players, when the moment they had the ball and they were coming towards you, Hope, they were like, I'm not one glance at you and they'd freeze, you know, it's like, it's a really, that's going to be hard casting, but it's going to be exciting too, because the girl who wants to play that's going to be exciting.
Well, we are not in any hurry. That's what I've realized. My life just keeps getting more interesting. Of course, the last couple of years, I've had some highs and lows, but the story continues on, you know, especially with Lowe's and Invitorio in my life. We got the Hall of Fame coming up. So I think that's what I realized. There's no hurry because there is time to tell my story, which means we might have a whole nother list of actresses to play me.
Yeah. There's some other girls that I'll talk to you about too, that also came out when I spoke to some casting friends of mine that, were recommending some really cool ideas. And I thought that's kind of brilliant too. Mm. So,
well, tell us some of your upcoming projects. Do you have anything going on right now?
Yeah, I just finished a TV series abroad, 8 episodes. I'm not super allowed to talk about it too much, but it's exciting. It's a American, French, Lebanese series that I did, crime drama. Wow. I show ran it. I lived in Europe most of last year. It was fun. It was good to just kind of, cause TV is still a very, you know, everyone's in TV right now. And since COVID, that's also what COVID did. It just ramped up the TV production. So that was kind of a fun experience, but to be honest, I miss the film experience. I miss just having the one film to focus on. When you have like 8 episodes, it's just it was too fast and furious for me. And it's, I love it. It's a faster rhythm, but I love being more like with one actor playing my lead in the film, you know, story of like, you know, 2 hours, one script and that's it. So I kind of miss that intimacy of like just having my crew for the one episode. And so the TV show is going to come out sometime next spring. I'll be able to tell you more about it. Some exciting.
So you said it's 8 episodes?
8 episodes.
How long does it take you to shoot 8 episodes?
Well, we shot for 65 days, which is a lot. So like our movie Hope will be like 40 days, 35, 40 days, like half of that. So ours is was 65 days, but they're 30 minute episodes. So that was good. If they were 1 hour, it would have been double that. So it's tough shoots.
Well, I don't think my audience entirely knows. Like I said, we have a lot of different guests on the show, a lot of athletes, of course. But what is the responsibility of a director? What do you actually do on set?
Yeah. So a director, so every movie you watch, let's say if you watch Goodfellas, that's Scorsese's film. The director is the visionary behind the storytelling. So what you're watching is his way of seeing that world, his way of directing the actors. A director's going to get, you know, you roll up your sleeves. You're basically the one driving the boat on set. And you hire all your head of departments, and the director, the actors are only with the director, the director's vision of the character and how the character transforms, or, you know, the performance. You're also giving levels of how to bring in the performance. So if there's like a big scene with 5 actors and it's a heated scene, you have to give them the moment of how to go into the scene, what you want out of the scene. It's very complicated. It's very character driven. But it's the director's vision. The director sees how to shoot the film. The director sometimes writes the screenplay. So they're the filmmaker. Everything you see on screen is the director. It's a very intense position because the actors can be, you know, very complicated in sort of figuring out how to tell the scene. But just like your story, it's like figuring out the way into the world and the message and driving the scenes to that ending finale of the scenes of the film. The director it's their movie. So everything you watch is that. So if you get a great performance, it's from the director. It's not
the
producers.
Unbelievable to hear. It sounds like a ton of work. Like you're the coach. You have to inspire the actors and actresses. You have to teach them what you see, your vision. You have to dive into the script with them. That's intense. What about the responsibility of like the lighting and the sound?
Yeah.
It's your project still. So you want everything your way, I would think.
So the director has a vision in mind. So I hope any film that you ever see, a director is never hired without them having the whole vision, the color palette, how they see it, if it's intimate, if it's close, if it's wide. And the director will hire their cinematographer. The cinematographer who does all the camera work. And basically the cinematographer is telling my story with their camera. And how they're going to move into a scene, how they're going to capture the moment, you know, one of like the hardest moments for the character in the scene, the family's highs and lows. There's always a thinking behind it. There's a technique and it's technical. And then this is also communicated to the actors. Like, hey, we love the scene to feel like it's distant from you and that you could never, there's psychology behind it, right? It's like playing a game. You're like, you're going to stay in this spot and then your defense is going to be here. It's the same idea to bring out that moment and to really sort of come together for it to work. So it's very complicated. And also, you have your producers that, you know, keep the day-to-day stuff, that make sure they help you get your vision done with the financing that they have to play with. So that's also complicated. Yeah. But everything from costume to production design to all of that, these are the head departments, but the director chooses his team. Okay. So you're like, I'm playing with these guys because they'll all bring XYZ to my vision to help make it even more, you know, what do you call it? Like more powerful in its palette, you know, more stronger in its storytelling. So this is a really tough thing. You have to have the right team, because sometimes you have the great team and the director sucks. And then,
oh, that would be horrible. There's
the
a lot
story
of
falls short
in this.
Yes.
What would be, I guess, the percentage of women filmmakers and directors in Hollywood?
Like 10%, I think, is where we are. We're at 10%, 10, yes. 11.
For a filmmaker, year. Or director, or both?
Everything.
Are you serious?
I think
Come
the writers.
Come on, Hollywood.
Okay, I know.
So what is it like being a woman filmmaker in Hollywood?
Listen, when you were starting off out of film school, it's a bit intimidating because you're just like, I don't fit. It's a boys club, right? That's how it was for me. I'm like, it's like every studio's top directors list for projects were all men, you know? So you're like, how do I get on that list? There might be more writers now, because I know during COVID, there was a lot of like the diversity conversation and like where we were lacking. So I know they ramped that up. That might be at like a 30% maybe, because TV, there's a lot of women writers in television, but the director's thing is still, I would say, under 15%. I don't think it's above that. It's just tough, because also it's just like right now every studio has like their top directors that they work with, and it's hard to break into that. And then if you come in and you don't nail it, then it's like, oh, you know, let's go back to the team we had prior to that. So it kind of ruins it for all women. And I've heard a lot of stories circulate about that. But there's a lot of female producers. There's a lot of women that, you know, run studios and they're executives. And that's cool. And also there's a lot of female showrunners. And the showrunners are the people who run like one season of Succession or one season of this show. So they're the ones that deliver the episodes and push and make sure all of it comes together. There's a lot of women on the rise there. So it's still finding itself. We're not there completely.
So you are within the 10 to 15% of female directors in Hollywood. And that's exactly why I wanted to have you come on the show to talk about the things that you love to do, which is to make movies, make films. And yet you're still, you know, trying to swim almost, you know, through the system of Hollywood.
Oh yeah. Hope I lose out to men.
Your passion and your confidence and how particular you are and focused. And, you know, I know when you went to write the script, for my biopic, you were missing, you were gone, poof, you couldn't get a hold of Christine Crocos for months on end, because I think you went to Greece, you took time to write, but you're very focused and passionate about what you do, but you're also very particular. And I think it's incredible. And that's why I really wanted to lift you up as one of, you know, this leader in Hollywood, this leading female director, because that is hard to do. I mean, you're leading men, women, you know, you're leading, like you said, the cinematography, the script, actresses. And I can see, because of, you know, sexism in the world that we live in, where you're supposed to lead everybody. So they don't necessarily want a female to be in that role, because you have to be a hard ass sometimes. You have to give direction. You have to communicate. You have to do it all. And I can't believe we're only at 10 to 15%. But like I said, you are one of those who continue to push, you know, to make changes, to insist on making changes in Hollywood.
Yeah.
That takes me to, I want to ask you, what is it like living in LA for you?
Well, I was there at the start of the pandemic, which, you know, obviously everything came to a halt. But I have to say, since that, LA used to have an energy of like magic. And I have to say right now, it's lost its magic. Like, it's not the cool club anymore. It's like something happened, because also during the pandemic, Hollywood was called out for a ton of stuff. And I felt like something kind of broke there. It feels very broken. And there's a, I have to say, a strange energy, because back in the day, everybody was out working at the studios. You'd go on the Paramount lot. It's like, oh, I want to be a filmmaker. Everyone's on their little golf carts. They're in every stage. It's like, it was so cool. I feel like it lost that magic. It's now like you go to Netflix and it's like a big streamer. And I hear so much about what's happening inside of Netflix and just like its hierarchy and how they're trying to find the right algorithms, or it's they're finding themselves. And I feel like it lost the artistic magic of old Hollywood, like the golden years where like they were making great films like Goodfellas or Jerry Maguire's and all these like great classic movies that I watch today. And I go, wow, they wouldn't make that today. Like today they couldn't make those movies, you know? And I find that sad. So I feel like it lost, just like we're losing the movie star quality, it's losing the quality of like the old great cinema. And I feel like that's where Europe and other places now, Hope, are on the rise. And LA just feels a bit, there's a vacancy there. I don't know. I feel like a lot of people also left and they're not working out of Hollywood and they're not part of the community since the pandemic. You can feel that.
New York seems to be the cool.
New York's cool. Yeah, Brooklyn's cool. It's always been
cool. Side of the coast these days. I'm a West Coast person. You know that through and through.
I know. Yeah, it's beautiful. Listen, West Coast is stunning and you have your nature and all that stuff. But it, you know, I remember you used to go to like, you'd pop into like a bar or a restaurant. It's like all the old Hollywood folks would be hanging out there. It's like, that's kind of gone right now.
You know, I got a taste of that when I was on Dancing with the Stars, going to these beautiful restaurants every week, seeing the stars, seeing the actors, seeing music producers. Yeah. I mean, it was just nothing. It was a beautiful thing to see. And we went to some of the old Hollywood Italian restaurants. Of course, you would know all of
Madeo's and Dantana's. I know. But you know what's funny, Hope, too? Like all these Instagram influencers are what's roaming the streets of Hollywood. And you're
goodness. Whew.
So now you're not getting like the real talent. You're getting these people that became famous through a pandemic because they had X amount of followers. And those algorithms we talk about, sometimes they'll look at an actor and go like, oh, they're on Instagram, but they don't have that many followers. And you're like, but that's a huge A-list actor that they don't care, you know? And you just go, how is that possible?
I wish more actors and actresses just didn't care about social media.
Me too.
Because they believe in their own work and you don't need kind of that outside influence necessarily. But all right, Christine, just give me this. I got to get back to my kids. I know I've taken so much of your time.
No.
I am just so happy to have you talk to us through this industry that is, we all love, you know, we all like to participate in watching movies and streaming shows, but we know a little about it. And so I'm just really happy that you came on and really shed some light into the industry. Is your movie of the year?
My movie of the year
We can even do a movie of the pandemic if you want in the last couple.
I would say the movie of the year, because the pandemic, my God, I saw so many, Hope, you know, the movie of the year for me was All is Quiet on the Western Front, which is the German film about World War I.
Oh my gosh, that's what it is. I was thinking, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It was too intense for me in that moment right before bed. I have not finished it.
You got to see it. It's really beautiful. It's amazing. First of all, the cast is amazing. And the lead boy is beautiful. That's his first movie. The lead, that was his first movie. Okay. So I was like, wow. So again, he got the performance, but that the director helped him get that performance, you know? The directing is stunning, but the message is also so powerful. Like you look at like an old war that wasn't even of our time and you see it today and it's so relevant. It's what we were saying earlier, Hope. Like that movie is basically saying war is bad. It's so relevant in today's, like with the Ukraine and Russia, you go like, wow, look at the timing of this movie and how it's speaking to everyone, you know, with all the world troubles we're having and the potential war that everyone's talking about. But it's just scary. And you see the innocence and the naivete of like these young boys who go and fight for their country and then what happens to them on the field and in the trenches. So you're really with them in the trenches. And when you watch that movie, Hope, you'll see that the camera's with them while they're battling. So it's like, that's the directing style to make you feel like you're with him as a soldier.
And very intense. Very, yes. I felt it.
For me,
and
that
we
was
had a lot of respect for, like you said, the cinematography, and we felt like we were a part of the trenches, like you said.
Yep.
So this much to the point where we had to take a break and cut it off for the right night.
Beautiful.
So maybe we'll check. Well, my mom. No, that
check
film.
It out. Yeah, check it out because it was a masterpiece.
Okay.
I thought this is a masterful movie. The sound, the cinematography, a masterpiece is always when every department is through the roof, like elevated cinematic experience. And it was, wow.
Okay. I'm going to check that out. Yeah. Movie of the year, All Quiet on the Western Front. What about series? I know you like the blockbuster films, but.
Series. What did I was a White Lotus lover. I loved The White Lotus. Yeah. I thought it was fun.
Pretty funny.
It's just, it was like dark, like the dramedy and, I just love Jennifer Coolidge. I thought, what a cool amazing character. You know, I love that she's in her 60s and playing a sex role, iconic, you know, beauty. Like, just all of that I thought was cool.
Yeah, that is a great show. Did you watch 1883?
No, I have not. But so everyone keeps telling me about it.
Okay, yeah. Check that out. Let me know your thoughts.
1883. Yeah, I'll check it out for sure. Stunning. It is beautiful. Yeah, I got to see it. You're like the third person that keeps asking me about it. I'm like, shit, I haven't seen it. Yeah.
Okay, check it out. All right. Well, I love you, Christine. Thank you so much.
Love you too.
Thanks for enlightening us. Stay strong out there.
You got it. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hope Solo Speaks is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcasts.
SiriusXM Podcasts.